Your Honors, I represent Denise Moldenhauer. Denise Moldenhauer is a dispatcher for a consolidated communication center in Pekin, Illinois, and has been for a number of years, and was denied a medical leave for a serious medical condition, which she should have been allowed because we believe she's an eligible employee under the Family Medical Leave Act. She worked for a not-for-profit corporation, but that not-for-profit corporation is unique. That had not more than the requisite number of employees, I think 23 at the most. But the way it was formed, and under the regulations, under the creating documents that, formed the center, and under the way in which she was handled and treated as the other employees by the city of Pekin, we believe there's clear evidence that she was a joint employee, or the city of Pekin and the county of Tazewell were joint employers. Now, we say this under the regulations because, first of all, under these regulations, the court is asked to view the entire relationship in its entirety. And that, doing that, it's easy to see that, that her work simultaneously benefited both the city and the county. That is because she was dispatching the police and fire departments, the city and the county sheriff's department, and this was the work that benefited the county and the city. This is why that she was the whole idea was formed, and that the center, as one employee, acted directly or even indirectly in the interest of the city of Pekin, the other employer, and the county of Tazewell. This is set forth clearly in the creating documents, which we've even attached as an appendix to our initial brief.
Forgive me. This is Judge Rovner.
Yes, Judge.
Is there any way in which you think the case of Sandoval versus City of Boulder case can be distinguished?
Yes, I do. First of all, in, Sandoval, that the there was in that case there were two city officials that were on the board of seven officials. Here we have four officials, all four, and the entire board is made up of either the city of Pekin or the county of Tazewell designees. That also in Sandoval, the court noted there was no evidence that the city was a member of the organization. If you notice here, the bylaws specify that the city of Pekin and the county of Tazewell are the members of the TPCCC and should fully participate in it. This is both in the document, the agreement created, and in the bylaws. They're the only members of the center when it was formed. So we think that is significant. Also, in Sandoval, I noticed that this, there is no evidence that the city could force the removal of the executive director. Here, Your Honor, that, the city or county could terminate and dissolve the entire center. They have that authority. I mean, I think that the center is not like a not-for-profit corporation, such as a multiple dystrophy or multiple sclerosis organization. As I say, the only members of the board are those appointed by the city or the county, and they control the purse strings. They're responsible for the debt if it they have to. It's set forth in the bylaws. They cannot even pay their employees unless it's approved by a budget, and the budget has to be approved by the officers of the city of Pekin and the board of the county of Tazewell. As I say, they're liable for the debts of this not-for-profit corporation, and the ultimate power that they have is the right to dissolve and terminate the center should they, for any reason.
Who has the power to hire and fire the employees of this not-for-profit?
I assume that the center would have part of the power, but strangely enough, when Denise Moldenhauer was hired, she was hired through the City of Pekin Police Department.
Well, did the City of Pekin continue to pay her after she moved to the center?
The City of Pekin that was listed as her employer, there's this myriad of documents that we had that we pointed out that the City of Pekin when she got her W-2s at the end of the year, it showed her employer to be the City of Pekin. She was treated throughout her employment as an employee of the City of Pekin, and as pointed out, the City of Pekin, even when the audited statements for the City of Pekin came out, they considered the center to be a component part of the City of Pekin, not a separate, distinct organization. And they were also, just one last point I'll make, and then I'll sit down or continue laying down, I guess, her boss at the center was a guy by the name of Steve Thompson. Steve Thompson was listed in the certified records of the City of Pekin as an employee of the City of Pekin and paid by the City of Pekin. So I think that when you look at the totality of the circumstances, that Denise Moldenhauer was certainly under the control of and subject to the wishes of the City of Pekin and its council and the County of Tazewell and its county board.
Thank you, Mr. Levin. You have some few minutes remaining for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Unrath? Mr. Murphy? All right. My card had you second, but it's your call.
Okay. May it please the court, I am Pat Murphy. I represent individual defendants John Houston, James Unzicker, and Stephen Thompson. As well as the County of Tazewell and the Tazewell Pekin Consolidated Communication Center. For ease of purpose here, I'll probably refer to it as TASCOM. In the underlying decision of the district court, the court granted summary judgment because it found that Mrs. Moldenhauer could not establish that she was an eligible employee under the Family and Medical Leave Act because her employer was TASCOM, which does not employ 50 or more employees at its location or facility located in the City of Pekin. In fact, TASCOM has never employed more than 23 individuals, including Mr. Thompson. And Mr. Thompson was the individual on behalf of TASCOM who made the decision to terminate Mrs. Moldenhauer after a series of progressive disciplinary actions and a series of grievances filed under her collective bargaining agreement that were appealed to first to Mr. Thompson and then to the Board of Directors of TASCOM.
Mr. Murphy,
yes.
Congress enacted this legislation.
Yes.
What do you think they had in mind as the focus of this exemption? Do you think it was this was the model, these joint groups, or was it more a private entity that, for whatever reason, they compromised on a certain number where they would limit the potential applicability?
Well, they had two purposes in mind, I believe, because they included the 50-employee limitation not only in the definition of private employer, but also in the definition of eligible employee, even as it applies to a public agency.
Well, but do you think maybe they had in mind a village of sparse population?
Not only a village of sparse population, but a state of Illinois that has an office in a rural county that's remote from the rest of state government, and therefore there isn't personnel available in that office to factor in to 50 employees. And there's no one within a 75-mile radius. Unlike the Fair Labor Standards Act, if you're an employer and you're an employee, you're obligated to make the payments that are provided by that act. Congress expressly intended not to make small operations, whether they're a larger employer or a smaller employer, subject to these requirements.
Yeah, but the parents here aren't so small. I mean, the county of Tazewell and...
you say parents. Their theory has been joint employer, not a single integrated enterprise.
Right.
And if you look at the Fain case, they say each governmental unit is a separate employer and is expressly defined as such in the regulations. Here you've got a not-for-profit corporation, which is neither a governmental agency nor an agency of one or the other. It's a separate not-for-profit corporation that was established in accordance with state law. I was getting to your point, Judge. Under the Arculo case, in a joint employer relationship, you don't look at the employees of the other employers who aren't jointly employed. TASCOM, Steve Thompson, can't go out and say, well, Mrs. Moldenauer didn't come in today. Send me over a deputy or a police officer to sub for her at the telecommunications desk. He's got 23 people, including part-time employees, to fill in. And Congress obviously recognized the inability of such entities to comply with these regulations and requirements. I mean, here we're dealing with a course of excessive absenteeism that continued over several years. And it's not a single 12-week period of absence. It's a call in today.
But the county and the city could expand that 23, to your point about not being able to fill in, the spot. There is the inherent ability to explode that number, right? Whereas I'm thinking,
if you wanted to have redundancy and have people sitting there waiting to do the job,
maybe in the next budget cycle, I guess. I mean, I'm thinking about whether Congress had in mind two very small counties in this country that merged for a fire protection district. You know, a lot of volunteer firemen, and then want to have a communication center and fund it.
Right.
And I just wonder if when we get to a situation where we have more sizable municipalities or governmental entities that are involved, whether that is perhaps the same focus. Perhaps it is, and maybe the language of the statute just is such that I'm just concerned about the potential for evasion here. Major municipalities.
Point out in the brief, TASCOM was set up in 1976.
Right.
And it's obviously not intended to evade the act enacted in 1993.
This case is important to the parties. We also want to think beyond a little bit.
Okay. I'm into Mr. Unruh's time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Mr. Unruh.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Craig Unrath, and I represent the city of Pekin. I first became involved in this case, and I looked and I saw we had a four-part test. And I thought, oh boy, we've got a multi-part test that always makes things simple. The more I looked into it, I realized we had potentially up to four different multi-part tests that could may or may not be involved in this. And quite frankly, I was a bit overwhelmed by it all. We have a test for a joint employer. We have a test for integrated employer. Now, if anybody can tell me what the difference between those two are, I'd welcome that. Now, plaintiffs have alleged a joint employment relationship. The Seventh Circuit has never addressed a joint employment relationship, but they have addressed an integrated employer. And under that test, and I won't belabor this court with the actual test, the court found that the four factors in the integrated employment test should be examined only as they bear on the precise issue of whether the parent corporation actually committed the discriminatory act.
Suppose, hypothetically, there was undisputed evidence that the Pekin mayor and the Tazewell County Board chairman had gone to the executive director of TCCC and urged him to fire her, and then she is, in fact, fired at their urging. In such a case, does it matter who normally has the authority to control and direct her employment if, in fact, in an instance like this, it was representatives of Pekin and Tazewell who controlled the termination?
Your Honor, as members of the board, I would expect that the police chief of City of Pekin and the mayor would have some input on employment decisions. Now, can you extend that involvement? Can you attribute that involvement to the City of Pekin itself? And that's where the entire examination falls apart. I see that I've actually have some limited time here, and I want to kind of cut to the chase. I was going to run through each of these four-part tests and show that there's a common thread between them, which is that the parent corporation must have some direct involvement in the discriminatory act. Judge Mim recognized that. He looked at this case and he said, now, wait a minute, the only connection we have between the City of Pekin and this and the center are the two elected officials that serve on its board. Now, can we attribute their conduct to the City of Pekin? And he said, of course not. That's ridiculous. Does the City of Pekin have the right to overrule the mayor when he makes an employment decision? Does the when the police chief says, you know, I think that we ought to change the work schedule of our operators? Does the city council have any input in on that? And the fact is, they do not. The creation and funding of an entity in and of itself is insufficient to constitute an employment relationship under the FMLA. Now, the fact that these public officials serve on various boards of charities and other nonprofit organizations, and I'm sure this is not the only one, does not mandate the conclusion that the governments may, they serve exert control or supervision over the nonprofit's employees. And that is the key to this entire case, because no matter what multi-part test you use, joint employment, integrated employer, direct employment, the result is always the same. You must show direct, hands-on, personal involvement with that discriminatory action. And in this case, they simply cannot do so.
Mr. Unrath, just one question. There was about the W-2s and showing that Pekin was the employer of, or at least on the W-2. What's your response to that?
Well, it's covered in the letter of understanding. They hired the City of Pekin to handle payroll. So when there's a garnishment action, well, who's handling the payroll? Who is going to satisfy that garnishment action? It's going to be the person that's hired to do the payroll. That would be true in any, even in a private business. If you hired an outside consultant to handle your payroll, the garnishment action would go there. The W-2 was being prepared by Pekin, and it was they were being paid for it. Thank you. We urge that you affirm the trial court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Unrath. Mr. Slevin?
Ever so briefly, Your Honors, if you hire an outside consultant to do your payroll, you don't use the outside consultant's tax ID number on a W-2. There's no reason why, if they were separate and distinct, that there would be a separate, there could not have been a separate one, but the fact they weren't. And I would also, you know, on the number of people as to where there is a limitation, I would remind the court of its decision in the Papa case, which said that, you know, they have a balance here, because on one hand you've got the person with a serious health condition will not be discriminated against because of that condition, and then on the other hand you've got exempt small employers when their act would provide a hardship. We pointed out that this act would not provide a hardship. I disagree with Mr. Unruh, with all due respect, that it's not the discriminatory act that makes the city of Pekin responsible. It is the fact that they have control over the operation. They have control because they control the purse strings, they control the budget, they control their very existence. And that this the various things that in the Papa case, they said small firms would not have the expense of mastering the intricacies, but yet here in the center had the backup of the city of Pekin legal department and the county's state's attorney, and so forth. They could have easily taken care of this, but it's the discrimination of against a person with a serious health condition that was not allowed to take a required leave, and therefore this is why the city and the county should be considered as joint employers. And I would just ask the court to look at the founding documents, and you'll see all of the safeguards they put in is why they kept control and kept their finger in the pie. And I would ask that the district court order be reversed and this case be returned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Slevin, and our thanks to Mr. Unruh and Mr. Murphy and Mr. Slevin.